C6, number 3A.
Now take the Christian Science textbook as a matrix, and we just try now to reason from the whole. To reason, therefore, from those two indices and see how Mrs. Eddy, in the chapter, has given us the point of intersection the subject dealt with in each chapter. Now, I feel very strongly, and I have seen that more and more, that if we really have a very good grasp of the textbook as a matrix with its 16 chapters as point of intersection, without any further detail about the chapter itself, but if one couches that matrix within ourselves, that it afterwards becomes very easy to think matrix-wise, therefore to think system-wise. And also you will feel that, after all, the textbook not only wants to give us an answer of what is God, of what is the One Being, but it also gives answers to all the various fundamental metaphysical questions. Say, if you would like to know what is matter, what is mortal mind, what is intelligence, what is law, what is idea, what is understanding, what is healing, all these things, if you want to know a structured answer, then naturally one has to go through the whole textbook, for all the chapters, and see how the textbook deals with these specific questions. You see the difference between this and an earlier approach. In the earlier times of our study, if we had a question of, say, supply or intelligence, things like that, intelligence, then what did we do? We went to the concordance. We didn't go to the whole of the textbook. We went to the concordance and were looking up references in the concordance. That had another disadvantage, namely that the concordance would not give us the passages in a chronological way, but the concordance has mixed them up according to subheadings. And so one would study this term, like intelligence, the first perhaps on page 273, the next one on page 171, and the next one on 577, and the next one on page 64. And you can see that you culture a consciousness that is absolutely unstructured. Absolutely unstructured. It's the old way of analysis of the past, looking at the last indivisible element, so to say, and then investigating that element, as I said yesterday. And then afterwards now I've got a better sense of that term, and because of the law of cause and effect, then naturally the better concept of that term would bring us a better result. Now this is the old way. It's not system. It's not structure. That's why I said yesterday, I'm more and more impressed the further away from all it is, year-wise. Can you say year-wise? Yes. More and more years are between him and now, the clearer one sees his big contribution. Here we have to see that with the new consciousness, we would take these questions not with the concordance, primarily, but with the textbook and look at all what it says on that subject chronologically, right from the first chapter to the last chapter, and form for oneself a matrix consciousness on the subject. And we will do two or three examples this week, and you will see how very different the answer is. But this answer, if we take these individual questions, needs naturally a good command also of text interpretation. Because without a good command of text interpretation, we get lost. Because without a structural sense of text interpretation, again, we get lost in the atomistic text interpretation. Can you see what I want to pass down? Those two different ages. And we can't help it. We live in this age, and we were brought up in the old age, and we have to see that we have to change our whole attitude and our whole approach, and have to go on with the world, with the progress. And this, you will feel that when one has a good grasp of the textbook itself as a matrix, that it becomes rather easy to make a matrix on these specific questions. Because text interpretation is then helped very much by our structured sense of consciousness. After all, we read the text with our consciousness. And if our consciousness is structured, it can read structurally. But if our consciousness is still in the old one of the atomistic, then we don't read these texts structurally. And therefore we will not get the right matrix. And that's the question. All right. So let's see how we can, just in big terms, formulate always each one of these chapters. Now, can you see when you have your matrix in front of you, can you see how now we can determine in a creative way what this first point of intersection, this first box, we could also call it box, it's a shorter way of saying point of intersection, so whenever I say box, you know that it is a point of intersection. We can know now, though it's still empty, we can know now what this first chapter must be all about. We know it already, though it is empty. Why do we know what it is, what it must teach us? Because it is a point of intersection, read vertically, meaning that the revelation we have up here. Don't try to get anything into the box. We do it like this, but we talk around about it, and then we come to a conclusion, and then we put into this box an epitome so that we all have the same epitome in it. Okay? So I just talk first around it, and then I say, now let's write down this and this. So can you see what must be in that chapter? What Mrs. Eddy had to write, and not wanted to write, had to write in it, because she was also under the command of the principle of being, which is structure. So she had to write here first how God's nature is revealed, the revelation of God's nature. Well, what does it mean that God has a divine nature if I don't accept it? What's the good of it? God's revelation is going on constantly and reveals itself constantly. But only a few accept it. It means that there must be another element, another aspect conjoined with it, namely that, now we come to the horizontal, namely that we accept the proposition of that revelation. That's the very first entry, so to say, into the one being that we are willing to accept the revelation of God. But we know very well God is not something up there, so we accept actually within us the nature of God. We accept the nature of God within us. Meaning, can you see? Meaning that prayer is actually not asking God to do something, begging God to do something. Prayer is therefore not a ritual. It's not a form of religious doctrine or ritual. It is an inward accepting that we are the nature of God. That's prayer. It's accepting actually that the nature of God is within us, and that nature alone really can understand God's nature. Life can understand life. Therefore, again, we get at once that wonderful sense that we are not approaching God as an ignorant petitioner, being ignorant about God, and therefore asking God to be so intelligent that He is going to help us to do this and that and the other. But we are seeing that God's nature, as a whole nature, is accepted within us as our nature. Then we pray aright. We pray aright then, if we now put in the seven synonymous terms, so to say. See, we can now do something very terrific, namely, but then we have the point of intersection here, but we can expand it through the seven. Always when we have being, we can either expand it through the seven or through the four. And so we see that matrix reading is a completely creative activity. It's not a passive accepting of something, but it's a very creative activity because it can use those symbols rightly, and by using those symbols rightly, we can expand and expand and expand and expand. Therefore, what can we see here? We can see here that the platform prayer tells us that prayer is not something where we have not accepted the nature of God. Therefore, where we approach God as a beggar, as somebody who does not know, who does not have, and asking God to give up we don't have and to do what we can't do ourselves. That's a wrong sense of prayer. The right sense of prayer, therefore, is to go right from the beginning, out from the standpoint that God's nature is accepted in us. If I say God's nature, if I say God, I can say mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. I can see that prayer, therefore, is if I accept with the divine mind the mind of God. If I accept with the divine spirit the spirit of God. If I accept with the one divine soul the soul of God. If I accept with principle within me the principle of being. If I accept with the one life in me the life of being. If I accept with the one truth in me, the one truth of God. If I accept that the one loving me alone is in unison, alone is in rapport, in communion with the one love. Can you see what happens? It means that life alone can understand life. Only God's nature in me and understand God's nature. Wherefore I have to express first God's nature in me, and that's prayer. Prayer is always answered prayer. I accept mind in me, spirit in me, soul in me, principle in me, life, truth, love in me, and that's prayer. Yes, this is the big point, and actually you know how that whole textbook starts with that poem. I think those first two pages are so powerful, so terrific really, because they right away start in with that sense that God already knows all my thoughts. They are not unknown. That spirit has answered the prayer. That soul is unchangeable and therefore sinless in me. Goes on to show that principle is already in operation. How in operation? Well, it is in operation as life. It gives us already more than what we accept. But God's nature within us is truth because he's already doing right. He doesn't have to be asked to do right. And that God's nature is of the nature of love and that his work is fulfilled. Therefore, you can see that if we approach the textbook rightly, we start out by having accepted the whole nature of God as our nature, and from there we go on. All right. Therefore, let's now make an epitome for this in here, and we'll try to be a bit stereotyped by using as much as we can really those two indices, the text of those two indices. Therefore, when we write here the epitome, what would be right to take the epitome from the top, from the vertical, namely the revelation of God's nature, must be accepted as my proposition, as my nature. So let's write the revelation of God's nature, the revelation of God's nature, by accepting God's nature in us. The revelation of God's nature by accepting God's nature in us. Yes. Therefore we can see God is never going to answer our prayers, he's never going to reveal himself to us, except we go out and see that nature of God is my nature and I have accepted it already as the nature of God. There is no other nature. And so from that standpoint I begin to realize that prayer is always answered. That prayer is not begging something to happen. And as we know, God knows what we need. We do not know what we need. Can you see what it implies that God knows what we need? It implies that all what we need is to accept God's nature. That's what we need. We don't need really money, we don't need really a house, we don't really need a friend, we don't need an opportunity, we don't need this and that. What we need is to accept God's nature. That's what we need most. And if we have that, we have something. We have everything. There's nothing in addition to be wished for. And that accepting God's nature as my nature, prayer is answered. There is no unanswered prayer. Therefore, we can see why then Mrs. Eddy at the end of the chapter would say that Jesus only gave one prayer. He didn't give all kinds of prayers. A prayer for this, and the prayer for that, and the prayer for this, and the thanksgiving prayer, and the prayer for family, and the prayer for this, and that, and the other. It says he only gave one prayer. Funny enough, the clergymen, they have a whole book on prayer. For every occasion, they have a new prayer. They have a thick book on prayer, like that. Jesus only had one. See? And in addition to that, Mrs. Eddy says that this prayer delivers us from the evil one. It doesn't even say that we have to be delivered from many evils, from many problems. Can you see again what I said yesterday about the old way of thinking, the atomistic way of thinking, and the system thinking? The atomistic thinking, because the atomistic thinking is thinking about parts, it wants to be delivered of the evil parts. Those evils, the numberless forms of evils as parts, the structural way of thinking which Jesus had, he was a prototype of the new science. The structural way of prayer is to see that we only have to be delivered of one evil, not of many evils, of the evil one. What is that evil one? That evil one is that we do not accept God's nature as our nature. That's the evil one. That's the devil, the duality. But it thinks that there is something besides God. You know that devil comes from duality. And therefore, we have only one prayer. It is so simple. And we see that matrix thinking is always simple thinking, never complex and complicated thinking. It can be complex, but not complicated. So Mrs. Eddy presents here, at that first chapter, a point of intersection which she wants to tell us, accept God's nature as it is, as your nature, and that is prayer. And that delivers us from the evil one, from that one evil that we think that we are not of the nature of God's nature. So we feel, therefore, that God and man have the same nature, has one nature, and are not dualistic. Yes. All right. Let's go to the second chapter, Atonement and Eucharist. And again, we can reason out what Mrs. Eddy must say here. See, I also like to feel I would have a spiritually minded student who has never read the textbook. Perhaps there is somebody in here who has never read the textbook and who could now, with those two indices, really know what Mrs. Eddy must have written in the chapter. What must she write? She was not free to write what she wanted to write. What must she write in that second chapter? Again, if we reason it out very schematically, in a stereotyped way, we can say, well, it's the point of intersection of what? Again, of the revelation of God's nature, but in which office? In the office here now of the Christ, the word of the Christ. What is the office of the Christ? It says, it manifests itself in spite of error. Or let's say in spite of the opposite or of opposition. Well, what does that mean? But God reveals himself as God's nature and manifests himself in us in spite of what? In spite of the opposite of God's nature. See? Wherefore, in spite of the ungodlike. So that chapter must speak all about how the Christ power of the nature of God is overcoming within us everything that resists the nature of God. Isn't that? Would that be logical? Therefore, she would have to show here that really by accepting God's nature within us, that this has a Christ, that prayer has a Christ, which ousts out of us everything that is of a God-unlike nature in us. And actually one of her key sentences is, but the divine must overcome the human at every point. Well, that's one of the key sentences you can take here, showing that the divine nature in us has a power, that's a Christ power, the power of manifestation. That Christ power of manifestation does what? It overcomes the God-unlike nature within us. So you can see that the Atonement and Eucharist means, it means, yes, through atonement, through prayer, seeing our unity with God, we overcome, Eucharist, we overcome everything that is not God-like. And that's atonement and Eucharist.